Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today in studio I have two guests. Mike Novak-Smith is not only one of the largest REO agents in the Inland Empire, but the nation. Mike is in the top 1% of all real estate agents nationwide and is experienced in REO, short sales, bankruptcies, asset management, and negotiating. Mike specializes in REOs in Riverside, Moreno Valley, San Bernardino, Paris, Rialto, Colton, and Corona. And Ted Becker is the owner of the company that Mike's at and broker for RE/MAX Results in Moreno Valley. Having started the company in 1989, Ted has vast experience in real estate and has been able to train and lead 35 of Southern California's highest producing real estate brokers and agents to close deals quickly and efficiently for a variety of clients in commercial, residential, multifamily, and office real estate. Nationwide Home Loans, Inc. and RE/MAX Results Escrow Division are associated companies. And before that, Ted, you practiced law. So welcome both of you to our show.
Thank you.
Ted, you opened a business in 1989. I would imagine, first of all, that's a peak year, and things changed radically after that. Was that something that you, your business model, did you see that probably changing very quickly, or did it surprise you at the time?
I'd love to say I foresaw a lot of things, Bruce, but I didn't see much coming.
I didn't either. 1989.
Came out of commercial real estate, which of course died after the 1986 Tax Reform Act.
Okay.
And said, well, there's nothing in commercial to do. Let's look at residential. And it looked attractive at the time, never dreaming that we'd see the ups and downs we have, but probably did. It probably was good to start when I did, because it did sort of steal me through some of the early tough times.
The flexibility of a business model all of a sudden became absolute. You couldn't do farming, let's say, and be surviving in the 90s, and you sure couldn't do it after, say, 2006 either.
Correct. Exactly.
I've been at a meeting at your company where I talked, and I remember prior to the meeting where they were talking about volume of sales, and I don't remember what segment of time it was, but Mike had, I'll pick an arbitrary number, but it was this diverse. Mike has 50 closings, number two is three, there's eight people with number one. Okay. I envision a meeting I wasn't at in 2006 where everybody's doing pretty well. How do you tell somebody that's doing well that their model is about to radically change and they have to do it before it actually happens?
Well, I will use, first of all, it's not easy. Real estate agents are a wide variety of people, as you know, some well-educated, some not so well-educated, some believe me, some don't. But I'll say the biggest example of that is three years ago, I started harping on short sales. Being able to hopefully foresee what was coming, I think I saw it pretty well. And, of course, agents 2 years ago said, oh, you're crazy. I'm not going to do that. Today, I think we'd probably be 40% of our sales are short sales.
Yeah.
The agents who refused it are probably gone. The ones who embraced it are doing relatively well relatively to the marketplace.
Yeah, and that's a very big statement. In other words, there's not a lot of easy commission checks anywhere. Mike, how long have you been involved in the REO listing side?
The first REO I ever listed was in January 1991.
Okay.
And I worked at a Century 21 office where they couldn't give the REO away. Basically, it paid 5% commission instead of 6. And they had a referral list, and I was like number 9 on the list. So when they got to me, I read a lot, so I pay attention. I knew the economy was going down. The Persian Gulf War had started. Things were tough. And I thought, well, if I do this deal at 2%, I can still make the house payment and the cars, and we can eat another month. So that's why I did it. And everybody that declined the deal at the time are no longer in the business.
Prior to doing the REOs, what was your business model?
My business model was show up at the Century 21 office and try to just live off the floor time and advertise, which I did well at.
Okay.
People would just walk in, say, I want to buy or sell a house, and you wrote the deal up. It was easy, very easy.
In that tail end,
yes,
of the 80s. When did you start, from when to when?
89.
That was when you started completely.
Yes.
So you started at the very peak year and then quickly transitioned, just like Ted, into...
Yes.
And really into unknown territory. The 90s wasn't replicated in the 80s. This was not the normal downturn. In the 80s, we had that radical interest rate change, but we didn't have a price decline because we were able to borrow that cheap financing and move it forward to other buyers. The 90s, we actually took a 5% gradual decline every year for a while, and that was news to anyone that owned California real estate that that could happen. How has the 2006 through, say, 2011 downturn differed from what you experienced, Ted, you first in the 90s as a business owner, and then, Mike, as you as an REO agent?
Well, I'll say this, Bruce. Honestly, I don't know that I remember the 90s as well because, honestly, we never really got up to speed. It took us 10 years, really, to get up to almost a critical mass of agents and holding on through the tough times. So early 2000s were good. Then the fall off was a real shock. When we saw the change, and really 2008 was the big change for us. 8 and 9, we had a lot of REOs, and then, of course, nothing for 2 years now. That's been the biggest challenge I've ever had. We've been able to really tighten up and cut out expenses, but that's the key.
Well, And how's it different for you, Mike, as far as those two cycles, the 90s? Was the 90s more consistent with inventory?
The 90s, I could predict it better. I could see the start and the end game. Now it seems like it's just never going to end. It was just easier to predict your business than compared to now. There's too many. You get a lot of curveballs today that you didn't get then.
What was the peak year for you as in this cycle for REOs as far as quantity of listings, would you say?
For everybody in general, it was 08.
08?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we didn't have the government intrusion that we have in the last 3 years.
No.
And that's what both of us are frustrated by.
If 2008 was a 100% year, what were the following years as far as percentage of, let's say, 2009 it went down by and so forth?
2009, I would say it went down about 20% for me.
Okay.
2010, probably about 60.
Okay.
And 11, maybe about 50. It picked up a little in 11.
Okay. So it actually went up from 10 to 11 a little
for
bit.
For me, yeah.
Okay. And by the way, is anybody at the lender on the lender side saying to Mike Novak, Smith, and Ted, by the way, we're just not going to be releasing so many? Or are they always telling you, staff up?
What I heard for a long time was maintain your staff, you know, don't cut anybody back. And that was kind of a mistake. I carried too much overhead through a lot of 2010. I finally decided I'm just going to have to cut it back. I'm okay with not making any money sometimes, but I hate having to feed it. Now I've got the right amount of staff, and if we pay attention and we you know, operate well, we can make some money. But the general opinion of when you talk to asset management people is they don't want to sit there and say, we're not going to have a job. They believe it's going to pick up and they're going to have REOs to sell, so they'll have a job. I believe that's what a lot of it is. And I don't think they can predict. I don't think anybody can predict it.
Well, they probably aren't at the policy decision level, and that's what, you know, someone in your position, one of the nation's largest, you would feel that you would have access to somebody inside actually telling you the real scoop, and that doesn't happen.
I know some people way up the food chains with various REO organizations, and even they, people with power and clout, they can't tell you. They just don't know.
They don't know.
Yeah, I don't know anybody really has their hand on it. They can't tell.
Your REO business peaks in 08, and from there, and in the 08, we had about a 3.4% delinquency rate, and we went up to 11.2. So your peak of foreclosures resulted in a 3.2% delinquency, and then we tripled. So the amount of REOs you probably should have been handling should have been some gigantic percentage above your peak, and it's declined. So I guess that shadow inventory term is, to me, it's real, but it's not where people think it is. So what's your opinion of what shadow inventory actually is?
I think what it is the process is not being finished. There's a lot of defaults going on, but the time frame between when somebody misses that first payment to by the time they foreclose is probably in many cases 18 months to 2 years. I ask a lot of people how long since you made your payment, and that's what I get. I run my own survey on it. I rarely get anybody less than a year. But I think the whole process is just slowed down, and that's your shadow inventory. It's not like the banks are sitting on millions of houses they own. They just don't finish the foreclosure.
And, okay, is there a valid reason why they don't do that?
Well, I believe part of it is I don't think if they foreclosed every which way they could, they wouldn't have the capability to handle the properties. And it's not so much in our area, but I hear of agents telling me, like in Detroit, in some areas that are really bad, they're really in a bad situation. They don't even want to foreclose because they don't want the house back. They don't want to pay. They don't want to be responsible for the code, liens, and the taxes. They just soon not even bother with it. Just leave it out there.
What's interesting to me is somebody always says to me, well, the lenders are too smart. They won't do that. Well, wait a minute. In 08, they did exactly what they shouldn't have done if they weren't going to continue it. In other words, they foreclosed on properties aggressively. We ended up with something like 17 months of inventory and a price decline of about 3 or 4% a month. And once you're there on that, you know, that low level of price and everybody's upside down, it's much easier to make a decision to walk when you have negative 50% equity. But I was just thinking, okay, as a lender, and this is when that civil code came into effect in California, I think it's 1169, where you can get fined $1,000 a day if you're the lender owning a property, or by the way, if you're a trustee sale buyer owning a property, because they have somebody come out and visit your place and you get a week or two to fix it, whatever they happen to see. When you resell REOs, is there a big problem with liens that have been placed on the property, or is that not a big deal?
We have a lot of problems with liens. I have a full-time employee. Her job's pretty much dealing with liens, code violations, and HOA problems. Part of the problem, I believe, with a lot of the banks is they don't have the internal staff anymore to handle these problems. It used to be they had attorneys on staff that would fix a lot of the code violations, a lot of the liens. And now a lot of that's not done. We don't figure it out till we start marketing the property and they come up. And I front a lot of money paying code violations and liens because typically the agents expected to pay them and then be reimbursed. So I'm really on it with full time. We're checking properties every day. I don't want any code violations because I don't want to front the money for it. But it's a lot bigger problem than it once was.
What percentage of your listings are occupied by somebody at the end of the foreclosure process?
I would say about 75%.
Okay. Thanks. And the attitude of the person behind the door, are they regretful they haven't made a payment?
I would say I run my own polling once again. Majority of them I've seen in the last 6 months are tenants of the former borrower.
Okay.
They're renters. And a lot of them just kind of have that bewildered look. How can this happen?
They didn't know they were about to be asked to go?
Okay. No.
Have they been informed about on the topic of cash for keys, however?
Once it happens, I think it's become kind of a street lore. It's urban legend. You know that you can go ahead and ask for cash for keys. Plus, with some of our clients, we tell them. You know, they know. You can go on websites. You can Google it. You can figure out how much cash for keys is going to be. A large problem I have is some clients are very generous with cash for keys and some are not. And many of them say, how come I'm only going to get $1,500 and my friend got $8,000? That's what I get.
If the Learning Annex was still in business, I'd swear there was a class being held at night.
It's a big deal. The cash for keys offers do vary a lot, and that does cause us some problems.
And does it have to do with the size of the loan or just the motivation of the lender?
I think it's the motivation of the lenders. The more well-known you are today as a lender, the more you want to pay.
Okay. How big of a problem did MERS robo-signing present to California's lenders?
I haven't seen much of it where it's a problem. I do believe with some of our deals, a lot of the loans are in pools, and portfolios, and sometimes we get slowed down because they're going to check the whole portfolio, whether most of the loans are in Chicago or Florida or wherever. And that has slowed us down sometimes. Stuff that was going to close maybe in January, they don't close it till March because of that. But I think it's more they're just in a mix of properties, not so much that specific deal.
The myth of bulk sales, bulk REO listings in the tapes. I've only fallen victim to that one time as I went around and looked at 100 houses in 2 days to get my piece of the dream. But there are people that have spent a year and ruined themselves by, you know, following something that seemed imminent that they were going to cash in on 100 houses and so forth. You've dealt with a lot of REOs. Successful bulk deals in California only?
Fannie Mae and several others do pool sales, and they advertise this. But it's usually beyond the capability of the small investor.
It's
the hedge funds. It's the bigger players. But it does happen. But where I get the calls is some person who wants to buy 10 houses in bulk. And the problem with that is with many of the lenders, there's 10 different investors on the deals. It's just not the same real seller when you get down to the bottom line. So I've never done it.
Okay.
I've never seen it work on my end.
Do you feel like there's sufficient properties going that route that it affects the volume that you guys see?
No.
Okay. What about note sales? Bulk note sales where you have, you know, big companies buy thousands or, you know, of loans at a shot. Is that significant in its impact in the REO listings?
I'm not sure we've seen them, to be honest, Bruce. And it's possible that they are going on, but we don't see them as brokers of property. But I'm not sure we've even seen them.
You don't see them in California as much as you see them other places. So there's, I can't think of the company's name off the top of my head, but in Orange County, there's a company in Irvine that buys very large pools, but the majority of the loans are not in California yet. But it's hard to say if that'll ever happen.
At what price do they buy them? Do you know?
Well, you know, I'm sure at a profitable price. But even if they got 60% off of face, if you will.
That's par today.
Yeah, that's right.
It's market value.
Right.
Today.
It would be hard to say that there would be a lot of room. I don't think, you know, and this was one of the reasons I was a moderator of a panel on bulk buying that HousingWire.com had a couple of years ago, because I was really fascinated with the concept, thinking, okay, this is probably really happening to somebody. Well, one of the companies that was on the panel, and there were three that were capable of buying 1,000 homes in a very short notice, was Williams & Williams Auction Company. Mm-hmm. Tommy Williams I know personally, and so, you know, I talked to the person that I believed to really know. And their infrastructure is such, because they have auctioneers all over the country, that they literally could get a 1,000 property listing within 2 or 3 days, legitimately see every one of them, and come to a number. They hadn't bought a property in a year. So they had the capacity, but there wasn't any inventory that was going that route in that kind of volume. So it's just, thus far, it seems to be a rumor. I just heard of another one yesterday from, you know, what, a bulk sale of one particular lender. So
it's such a great theory, but when you think about the actual, somebody has to go out and actually look at these properties to make sure they're even there. I mean, we've had REOs that we go out to look at, they're not even there. They burned down a year ago.
Well, and, you know, it seems, you know, one of the things that you guys would really have a grasp on is how much infrastructure there is as far as capacity to move inventory already in place. You don't have to invent a thing. Like, how many listings more could you have? A multiple of like 300 or 400%, just you personally.
Sure.
Well, that's replicated everywhere. You could drop a lot of properties into the United States REOs, and it would get absorbed by current staff, or trained staff could get added, and that would make sense more than selling thousands of homes to a hedge fund to me.
Right.
There were a couple things in that White Report that they're talking about. One of the routes was, you know, doing the big bulk deal. And just a couple of days later, I see a headline for $650 million pool by one of the well-known big companies. They're going to buy REOs and retain them as rentals. And that sounds significant until you look at the numbers of how much debt there is in excess. And I was sharing to you before off air, got basically a $3 trillion problem when you start throwing $650 million at it. You kind of go, wow. That's an insignificant thing.
Right.
So I suppose, short of saying, okay, we're going to forgive everybody, whoever owes more than their house is worth, we're probably in for a long haul. Is that what you're saying, that you think that this is going to be years?
I don't see any end in sight. It just doesn't seem, I don't see an end game currently.
And you don't see a change in the aggression of saying the lenders just say, okay, let's cut to the chase and let's just take them all back. That doesn't seem to be in the cards.
I haven't seen that yet. I think if a lot of the houses were sold to hedge funds, I think you'd see a lot more, they'd be a lot more aggressive because they wouldn't care about their name being dragged through the mud. They don't have a public name. They don't have a retail presence. I think that's part of why it's slow in some cases.
One of the suggestions in that White report was giving, getting a deed in lieu of foreclosure and giving the people a right to buy the property back some years later. So the same occupant owner returning as owner in some time frame. What do you guys feel about that?
I think it's kind of silly. I think once the person's given up on the property, as we've seen, stop making payments a year or 2 years ago, when you go to that person, and you have said it yourself, Bruce, you go ask that person to start making payments again, they laugh at us.
Mm-hmm.
They say, we're not going to do that. This is too good a deal.
I don't know how you rationalize that with the guy next door who's made payments on the same loan either and go, okay, well, do I get the deal too?
Well, we have a, I won't name names, but one of our clients offers the ability to for the occupants to lease the property for a year. We have started a few of those. We have yet to see anybody finish before they fail and ended up being evicted.
So they're just in the habit of not paying, and that's going to be
continued. Not paying's a good deal. They like it to continue.
I remember a news article that they were talking to a family that hadn't made payment in a couple of years, and it was a very positive experience for them as far as what it did for them financially. And you know, you start thinking about that. There's an expectation that that's okay, and there's an expectation that that's it's almost sad when it ends, and you're just going, wow.
Well, you're more of a researcher than we are, Bruce, but what percentage do you suppose of those people who haven't made a payment for 2 years have saved all those payments?
Yeah, zero.
All right.
Well, there is a statistic that I'm familiar with, and it's a national number for about 4,100,000 people that are 90 days late or beyond, and that includes REOs, which is about 8% of all the nation's inventory. And a study that they've done basically says that when someone is 90 days late in 2011, that mindset, the 1% chance that they will willingly write a check to make it current. So 99% of that 4 million pile is going to go the route of a lowered opening bid at a trustee sale, a short sale, an REO. It's just timing. I don't know exactly when it's going to all show up. In your business model, you've made an early statement that short sales have really aggressively gained momentum. Are they ahead of REOs as far as closings at this point?
You know, I haven't looked in the last few months, but I'd say they're even.
Okay.
Last year, roughly, we had about 20%, roughly 20% normal sales, and about evenly divided between short sales and REOs, and that was in 2011.
Well, I tell you what, that ratio, I've looked at charts for years, as you know, and I've not come up with the real meaning for what you just said until recently. What that means is that when you close 100 sales, only 20 buyers emerge. That
really
hit me, that we're missing in the Inland Empire 80% of the closings are going to be vacant or bought by someone new migrating here or somebody that wasn't credit damaged or an investor for cash. That's not a lot of people. I mean,
unfortunately, it's many of the people who walked from their homes 3 years ago and now have repaired their credit and are able to buy again. There are very few of those, but it's shocking in today's world that the person who did the wrong thing 3 years ago seems to be saving the system.
Well, and had we foreclosed on somebody instead of waiting, the people that are behind by 2.5 years haven't had one day of new credit.
Exactly.
Give us some information on your office if you have a website. We only have 30 seconds left.
Remax-results-ca, California.com.
Okay.
You can also find us more easily by going to remax.com. which will get you to our office more easily.
Okay. Ted and Mike, appreciate your time, and we'll pick this up in our next segment.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.